The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
And tonight I'd like to talk about happiness. We don't actually talk too much about this here, but I'm going to start with this topic through the very familiar topic of suffering. So I'm going to kind of come at this topic of happiness through suffering. So a lot of us actually come to this practice, come to to a spiritual practice because we have encountered some kind of suffering. And the Buddha at one point said that he saw that there were two responses to suffering: either confusion or search. And so this search that we engage in when we meet suffering is usually a search for happiness. That's essentially what we're doing here. We would like to find a way to be free from our confusion, our frustration, our anger, our struggles, our despair, our depression. We'd like to find a way out of that and find a way to meet happiness. So really, I think a deep in the core of us is a fundamental wish for happiness. And it's actually a very wholesome wish. It's a beautiful wish. It often gets misdirected in our search for happiness, and I'll talk some about that this evening, how in our confusion, how confusion overlaying that deep inner wish for happiness kind of leads us astray. But deep inside, deep at our core, there is a wish for happiness. And this has actually been acknowledged in one neuroscientist. I'm reading a book by Antonio Damasio right now. And he's a leading neuroscientist working on the field of consciousness and the field of self. And what is the self? How does this happen? How does the self happen in the brain? And how does consciousness happen in the brain? And in talking about how the mind and body keep a kind of balance, kind of a homeostasis, he says this: the optimal range, and by range here he means of the homeostatic life process, the optimal range of the homeostatic life processes express themselves in the conscious mind as pleasurable feeling, dangerous ranges as not so pleasant or even painful feeling. Optimal workings of an organism which result in efficient, harmonious states of life constitute the very substrate of our primordial feelings of well-being and pleasure. They are the foundation of the state that, in quite elaborate settings, we call happiness. So he actually proposes that kind of our being is trying to find its way to happiness because the feedback mechanisms in our mind and body kind of lead us that way through this feeling of well-being. And we can really watch this unfold in our meditation practice and in our spiritual practice as we engage with mindfulness and paying attention to our experience. We begin to understand how mindfulness leads us towards that homeostatic balance of well-being. And we also begin to see the ways in which we confuse and misunderstand where happiness is. So a lot of our practice I mean, what a seeming practice as we explore our experience, the instructions being to meet our experience as it is. Often what we meet is our suffering, our struggle, our dissatisfaction. We want things to be other than they are, and we're frustrated. We meet that frustration. So this is the first noble truth. This is the truth of suffering, of stress, of dissatisfaction, of dis-ease, of unease. Things just don't quite feel right. They don't quite feel in line. So we meet that. And a lot of our practice, a lot of our experience, as we turn our mindfulness to our experience, both in sitting practice and in our daily lives, is meeting our struggles. And the Buddha encouraged us to do this. He said, understand your suffering. Understand it. If you understand your suffering, basically it will transform. Understanding suffering leads us to see how suffering gets put together. We see the causes for suffering. We see the wanting that kind of underlies, basically the fundamental wanting things to be other than they are. That kind of wanting, that's what leads us to this feeling of dissatisfaction. And so a lot of our practice is about noticing those, being able to turn with mindfulness and meet those experiences. And sometimes we're so focused on this side of the practice, of the understanding of suffering. Like we get into these ruts of, yep, I'm really going to meet this anger, I'm just going to hang out with this anger. And we actually forget that there's a whole other side of the equation. The third and fourth noble truths are actually talking about happiness and the path leading us to happiness. The definition of the ultimate happiness actually being the ending of suffering. Maybe it doesn't sound like a very exalted happiness, but just even envision in your mind if all of your reactivity went away, if there was no reactivity to anything, that you could meet every experience with perfect equilibrium, perfect balance of mind. No problem. Life would be pretty smooth. So that's kind of the deepest happiness, this ending of this reactivity to our experience. And the fourth noble truth being the path leading us to that happiness, that ending of suffering. So sometimes we, in the practice of looking at our suffering, we forget that the Buddha is actually encouraging us not only to let go of our struggles, let go of the wanting, the craving, let go of those states that lead us towards suffering, all the unskillful states of mind that lead us in that direction. And he also recommends cultivating the qualities that lead us away from it. There's a teaching that he has, the four right efforts. He talks about both sides of this again. You know, half of the four right efforts are about letting go of unwholesome states, of those states that are rooted in greed, aversion, and delusion, those states that lead us into suffering. Anger, hostility, frustration, desire, the lust, the confusion, the boredom, all of those states that just were not really settled into the present moment and meeting it as it is. So he suggests letting go of those, abandoning them. And he also suggests in these four right efforts, he suggests cultivating wholesome states, cultivating the beautiful qualities of mind. Kindness, compassion, generosity, happiness. Cultivating happiness is part of our path. It's okay. It's okay actually to cultivate happiness. And so that's kind of what I'd like to talk about tonight. You know, when we live our lives, you know, we've been kind of conditioned through the way we've met our experience, and patterns and habits kind of come into being early in our life and get reinforced over and over again. We learn how to meet experience in a particular way. Perhaps as a young child, certain patterns lead us to meet the world with a little bit of hostility or suspicion or fear. And those patterns get reinforced, and that's how we learn to meet our experience more, and it's carried into our adult life. So our patterns and habits, these conditioned patterns and habits that we all have, we all have our own favorite flavors of these struggles that seem to happen over and over again to us. They seem to draw us. It's almost like, you know, they're so practiced, they're so familiar, that if we get anywhere near something that's like those habits, it's like a magnet. It just pulls us right in to those states. For myself, it felt like this deep rut of anger in my mind. And it was so easy for a little ball to go rolling along and just drop right into that deep rut. And once it was in that rut, it was pretty hard to get it out. So these grooves, these ruts, they're so ingrained that it's like they tend to draw us to them. There's different ways of meeting experience. I mean, we have all these filters on experience. So these filters, these habits, these patterns create beliefs around our world. So for instance, for myself, you know, I had this anger pattern, and I also had this, you know, really kind of a deep unhappiness pattern. I deeply believed that I was an unhappy person. Everything seemed to confirm it. And before I started practicing, the way I responded when I felt some happiness was kind of like, well, yeah, I'm happy now, but, you know, I really know that what I am is unhappy. So my mind had this view, this belief, that unhappiness was the truth. And so it wouldn't really take in the happiness. It wouldn't take that in. So we need to kind of be aware that our habitual patterns, our habitual habits, our habitual tendencies of mind may kind of have a filter on our world such that we don't see the happiness. We don't see the beautiful qualities of mind as much as they actually might be present. Or if they do happen, then we kind of tend to dismiss them. It's like I was doing, well, yeah, I'm happy now, but I was kind of just very dismissive of the happiness that I experienced. And then there are also filters that happen as we enter into those ruts. You know, if I've on one retreat, I remember entering into that rut of anger and aversion. And it was like everywhere I turned, everything my eyes landed on, I hated. You know, I saw somebody's shoes across the room. It's like, what are those shoes doing there? It was just, you know, that was the filter that my mind was looking through, was that filter of anger. And so when that filter is operating, we don't tend to see the beautiful qualities. So our habits and patterns can kind of work against us. So one of the most important practices or processes around practicing happiness or cultivating happiness is to actually learn to acknowledge it when it happens, to get familiar with the different flavors of happiness. And there's quite a few. I'll just name some. You know, contentment, happiness, delight, pleasure, joy, ease, peace, a lot of range to the feeling. You know, some of them are more obvious and some of them are more subtle. And in this turning towards allowing ourselves to recognize these moments, we can start to see that they actually happen a little more than we thought they did. And this noticing of these moments can have a cumulative effect. There's another teaching of the Buddha's that I really love. It's a one sentence, a one sentence like condensation of so much Dharma in this one sentence. Whatever one frequently ponders, that becomes the inclination of the mind. And so if we frequently ponder and reinforce our patterns of anger and frustration and wanting, that's where our mind goes. If we start to turn towards the happiness and begin to think about, reflect on happiness, what causes happiness, how we can cultivate happiness, our mind begins to move in that direction. Whatever one frequently ponders, that becomes the inclination of the mind. So in thinking about this topic, I kind of want to explore a lot of different kinds of happiness or levels of happiness, not so much the different types that I just mentioned, but different ways that happiness comes about in our lives. I'd like to start talking about this by talking about the usual way we think happiness comes about in our lives. We usually think that happiness comes about by getting what we want. That's what we've been taught, and that's what we've actually experienced from the time we were young. You know, that if we get what we want, there's some happiness. And so we, you know, over the course of our lives, seeing this little bit of happiness, after getting what we want, we start to believe that where happiness comes from is by somehow managing to construct our lives to continually be able to arrange it to get what we want. We know that getting what we want, that's a kind of impermanent thing. I mean, we do have a sense of that. We know that the happiness of having a good meal only lasts the length of time of that meal and maybe a few minutes after that. But we think if we can have that good meal and then have a good dessert and then watch a good movie and then, you know, sleep on a really comfortable bed and then get up and have a beautiful sunny day. I mean, if we could just arrange the world to have it be just one moment after another of what we want, then that would be happiness. That would be, and that's what we think would be as good as it gets. And that's what we think. That would be the best kind of happiness there is. So the understanding, actually, you know, I'm going to use a graphic here. As we start to get familiar with our minds, and we see that getting what we want is an endless rat race, that it's an exhausting process to try to arrange our lives in this way, and that we end up feeling dissatisfied by this whole process of endlessly trying to arrange our lives, we begin to see that there might be some kind of better happinesses out there. So I was a mathematician, and there's a computer scientist also, and there's a process, a procedure, an algorithm called the hill climbing algorithm, and in it you have a graph where there are two, you know, multiple peaks on the graph, and the algorithm is supposed to find the highest peak. And so you can see, you know, if you're starting from this point, that you'll come up to this point, and the algorithm sees that everywhere from there is going down, so it's found some kind of a peak. But the algorithm needs to be smart enough to know that that first one may not be the highest one, and so to keep looking. So you have to kind of go down again. And so kind of like what this happiness that I just described of getting everything that you want, it's kind of like being on this peak and having it be really cloudy so that you don't see that there are other peaks out there. And so you think, this is as good as it gets. But as we start to practice, we actually start to see there may be some other kinds of happiness out there. Perhaps some deeper kinds of happiness. So in some kind of a paradoxical way, the letting go of this kind of driven agenda to just continually get what we want, it takes a leap of faith. You know, if you're standing on the top of that mountain and it's cloudy all around and you can't see the other mountain over there and you don't know which way to go to get there, it's like it takes a leap of faith to go down and say, let go of some of these pleasures. Let go of how we know we can get even just a little bit of happiness. It takes a leap of faith. But as we begin to let those agendas go, that sense of I need to do these things in order to get these things, in order to please these people, in order to make this money, in order to buy these things so that I can have those things that those people have, and this endless kind of comparing and keeping up with what everybody else has. If we can let go of that, we can begin to enter into a realm of kind of, it's another level of pleasure, kind of a simpler level of pleasure. Now, the pleasure of our usual understanding of getting what we want is often connected to sense pleasure, of material goods, of getting things, of having pleasant experience, of having somebody love us, of, you know, just kind of arranging our lives to have pleasant sense experience. And paradoxically, if we let go of that agenda of arranging to get a kind of sense pleasure that we think we want, then we can enter into this world where we're just meeting the sense experience that's happening. We take a walk, and there's the sunlight on the trees, and there's the flower petals strewn on the sidewalk, and there's the breeze on the cheek and the warmth of the sun. And this very simple kind of sense pleasure brings some kind of happiness and joy to us. This kind of happiness is a little bit more in the moment. It's hard to hold on to it. You know, it doesn't last very long. It's very fleeting, this kind of sense pleasure, and this kind of, and the happiness that comes from it comes because we are willing to enter into the moment and just be here now with what is. It comes from letting go of our agendas and doesn't really come at the expense of anything. I think some of us too have this idea, I know I did, have this idea that before I really understood what a deeper kind of happiness is, I had this belief that happiness was a zero-sum game. That somehow there's only so much happiness to go around. And if happiness is tied to material things, then there may be something to that. You know, the United States takes all the oil, there's not much left for anybody else. So, you know, there's this kind of sense of it being a give and take. If I have happiness, it means somebody else is missing something. If they have something, then it means that I'm missing something. The happiness that comes from just entering the moment and meeting moment to moment what's happening, kind of aligning ourselves with just things as they are in this moment, doesn't take away from anything. Everybody can meet that, meet this experience. So it's skillful to notice these kinds of moments of sense pleasure, these moments of just being in the moment. That's a way to begin to connect with a deeper kind of happiness. It's fleeting, but it's actually, in a way, it's more reliable because it doesn't depend on having things to be other than they are. So this, the happiness of sense pleasure, and there is, the Buddha actually talked about there being several kinds of happiness available in the sense realm. And he actually talked about the happiness of wealth, the happiness of having possessions, that this is a happiness. It was tied to those wealth and possessions being acquired in an ethical way. But he talked about that having possessions could be a source of happiness, and that the enjoyment of those possessions, in particular in being able to support our families, provide for our children, and to be able to support other people in a kind of a generous fashion, that those are sources of happiness in the material realm. But this kind of happiness, this happiness in the sense realm, is actually, it's actually the least kind of happiness. There are multiple hills on this graph of the kind of happinesses that we're going to explore tonight. And the happiness of sense pleasure is one of the low, it's the foothills. It's in the foothills. Also in this realm of the happiness of the sense world is the happiness of generosity, which I just mentioned. That if we find ways to be generous, and it doesn't just mean about material things, it means about finding ways to be generous with our time, to be of service, to share our presence, share our understanding, share our kindness and compassion. The sharing, that connection with others through sharing, brings a happiness. And there's an understanding, and I've experienced this teaching that. The happiness of generosity doesn't just happen when you're giving a gift or when you're offering something of yourself. It happens as you're contemplating offering it. You can check this out in your own experience. If you're finding in contemplating offering something that there's a hesitation or not a happiness, you might want to look at what's going on. Is it overreaching? Or are you clinging to something? But if there's a true generous heart offering something, there's a kind of a happiness just in the contemplation, the thinking about the offering. Then there's the happiness of the offering. And then there's the happiness after, reflecting on the gift, reflecting on the offering. So generosity can be a great source of happiness for us, if we let it, if we understand it to be a source of happiness. I think so often we receive an invitation in the mail for, a donation, and, we just write out a check and we don't really contemplate it. While I was on this retreat, I was doing a retreat at home, so I was at home and I was secluded, and somebody brought me some groceries every 12 days or so, but I did go out to my mailbox and empty my mailbox regularly so that it wouldn't get too full. And one day there was a letter from Oxfam. And I've had to, for the last few years, I've had to let go of the donations because I haven't had too much money. And this past year, I've gotten a little bit of money that I can give away. And I got this, and it's like, oh, I can give some money. I can give. And so just thinking about it made me happy. And so I actually decided I was going to go ahead and do it right then and there. So I didn't wait. I didn't like file it away. I decided to make it part of my retreat. You know, I'm going to make this donation now. I'm going to do this. So if we connect with what we're doing when we're offering something, see if you can connect to the sense of connection that it makes and the sense of happiness it can bring. Also in this realm of the sense pleasures and the sense world, material world, and the kind of interrelational everyday world, is the happiness of non-harming, the happiness of ethical conduct. This is a kind of a happiness that arises in the absence of regret and remorse, essentially. And that when we behave in ways that cause harm, it comes back to us. It causes agitation, it often causes feelings of regret, of remorse. It can cause feelings of trying to rewrite the past. Well, I didn't really do that. It really was that I meant to do this, and it wasn't, that's not the way I intended it to be, so. And we just kind of spin with our thoughts when we do something that causes harm. And so the happiness of non-harming is the happiness of behaving in a way that doesn't cause harm basically allows the state of non-remorse to arise. And this is a subtle state. Can be a subtle state. I mean, sometimes we're not thinking about it often. I mean, it can be something we recognize if we reflect back on reflect back on your day to day, and you may find some times where, you know, you were behaving with kindness and compassion and generosity, and allow that reflection to support the sense of happiness of non-harming. The Buddha talked about this being a very lawful process. Behaving ethically, he says, naturally leads to the state of non-remorse. He says, in one with non-remorse, this very naturally, you don't have to have an act of will. If you have behaved ethically, he says, it doesn't have to be an act of will to feel non-remorse. It may need for us, I think, to open to it, to actually consciously reflect and remind ourselves that the ethical behavior actually produces this state. But it's a very natural consequence. It's not something we have to do. If we behave ethically, this state of non-remorse is present. And he says, and in the state of non-remorse, it's just very natural. It doesn't take an act of will to be glad. And in one who's glad, it doesn't take an act of will to feel joy. It's kind of moving through these different levels of happiness, starting with just the simple ethical conduct. This is the happiness of non-harming leads to sometimes what is called the bliss of blamelessness. And again, it connects us with others. This is the field of interpersonal relationship, generosity and non-harming. And basically, we're cultivating metta. We're cultivating kindness. Metta, the Pali word for loving kindness. And this can lead to the possibility of opening to compassion and joy. The open heart meeting the world without resistance naturally feels this sense of kindness and well-wishing. And it's a happy feeling, actually. It feels good to wish well. That kind of took me by surprise when I first felt it. It's like, wow, like just wishing for others to be happy makes me feel really happy. That was quite a surprise. And that open heart meeting joy in the world responds, resonates with joy. That open heart meeting suffering in the world responds and resonates with compassion. These beautiful qualities, these beautiful qualities that come as we open our hearts and connect. And instead of having boundaries and barriers between us and others, it feels more like a free-flowing exchange. And that's a happiness of kindness, of loving kindness, the happiness of joy, of sympathetic joy, of appreciation. And then, too, as we move into more deeply into the meditation practice, there's many kind of new levels of happiness that open up as we enter into a deeper commitment to meeting our experience. The happiness of concentration. As we engage in meditation, you know, in sitting meditation, if we can engage in just being present over and over again, meeting our experience, bringing our attention back, the concentration cultivates through the continuity of awareness. Through noticing the mind has wandered, bringing it back, noticing it's wandered, bringing it back, just over and over again, slowly the mind begins to stabilize and settle in the present moment. And that stabilization is concentration. What happens as that, as the mind stabilizes and is able to just be in the present moment, even with something as simple as the breath, you know, just able to meet the breath for, on this last retreat I discovered, you know, three breaths, about three breaths is, it can happen pretty quickly if you just can really meet the breath. The hindrances, the kind of agitations about the world fall away. The hindrances being the qualities of desire, of sense desire, of ill will, of disconnection, of sloth and torpor, of sleepiness, of dullness, of restlessness, of anxiety, of agitation, and of doubt. A doubt in the practice, doubt in the teachings that lead us towards happiness. So those states fall away, and the falling away of those states results in a really, really pleasant state of mind. Very peaceful, blissful even, rapturous even. Very pleasant through the body, sense of well-being can arise. And again, it is through the falling away of things, not the holding on. It is the falling away of the hindrances, of those states that agitate us, that leads to this state of well-being. So this is really kind of where I think this is where the homeostasis really begins to show us the way. That we really begin to see this feeling of well-being isn't dependent on having to arrange the world in a particular way. It's the letting go that brings this sense of well-being. So the happiness of concentration, many different levels of happiness of concentration. I won't go through that. I want to See if I can get through all of these. I don't know if the hell you can get through them. The next kind of avenue towards happiness that I want to explore is just that the happiness of engaging with our mindfulness, the happiness that can come as we start to explore our experience. I mean, it sounds a little counterintuitive if you're new to the practice to turn with mindful attention and just meet the feelings of struggle, of suffering, of difficulty, of chaos, of fear, of anger. Turn mindfulness to them, to that, and just meet it. It sounds counterintuitive. Why would I want to do that? But as we do that, we start to see that a kind of a little space opens up around these difficulties. And there's a shift of kind of ease, of relaxation. Even as this difficulty continues, it's kind of like we've taken a step back. And if you've been engaged in working with this, you may have seen this happen from time to time. You know, that, you know, you're enmeshed in something but just working with it, and suddenly there's just like this, oh, I see, this is just anger. Oh, this is just frustration. And suddenly there's a little bit less identification with the difficulty. That's actually an insight. That's kind of the happiness of insight in a way. That as we see that shift, there's that kind of feeling of relaxation, of release that can happen. And there can be, as we engage in the practice, a feeling of joy that comes through knowing that we're engaging in a direction that is taking us towards that well-being. As we begin to see that the path of mindfulness leads us to well-being through our own experience, the practice itself is a source of joy. And the insights that we meet are a source of joy. The happiness of letting go, the happiness of seeing reactivity and being able to meet it without responding to it. Again, getting that little sense of space around our anger or our struggle, our frustration, our disappointment, our despair, our depression. It's just a process. It's just something happening. We get a sense that it's impermanent, that it will pass. And when it passes, we see that passing, and there's a confirmation of that understanding. There's this happiness of the letting go as we engage in this process of trying to meet our struggles. What we're doing essentially is learning how to meet things as they are. The struggles result usually from some kind of misalignment with things as they are. Our struggles result from somehow, somewhere, wanting something to be different than it actually is right in this moment. And so the meeting of the struggle is essentially kind of, okay, acknowledging what we do as we get a little bit of space around that struggle is that we're acknowledging, oh, this struggle is actually what's happening in the present moment. And there can be some ease around that struggle. And as the struggles fall away, we begin to see what it means to actually come into alignment with the present moment. What does it mean to just be able to accept this moment as it is? Now, it doesn't mean, I mean, this moment is already here. It's already here. There's nothing we can do about it already. I mean, everything that has happened in the past has brought us to this moment. And meeting this moment as is doesn't necessarily mean that we don't step forward consciously with a skillful choice, perhaps to reorient. So this aligning ourselves with things as they are isn't about just sitting back and not doing anything and just assuming this means, oh, this just means I'm supposed to sit like a lump on the log and just let things roll over me. That's not what this is about. But it is about meeting experience as it is and what's happened now. There's no point in resisting what is here now because it is here. What we learn to do is to meet it skillfully. Meeting it skillfully means mindfulness, non-resistance, non-reactivity, and perhaps skillful action out of compassion, out of generosity, out of kindness. The actions, when they're out of the more wholesome qualities of mind, will lead us towards happiness. And that ability to learn how to meet this moment without resistance has a great quality of happiness to it. And from that place of happiness and kind of relaxation and ease, it's kind of more of a feeling of ease, I think, that being able to just not resist this moment. From that place of ease, it's much easier to be skillful and to choose wisely how to step into the next moment. And in that choice, we can choose the direction that leads more to happiness. Choosing the intentions, choosing the actions that are based in kindness, compassion, wisdom, rather than greed, aversion, delusion. So I'm going to skip some of these things. So just kind of as a summary, I just want to kind of summarize a little bit. Cultivating happiness. There's so many different kinds of happiness. Notice when happiness comes into your life, in whatever form it is. And one of the other teachings I love about the Buddha is that in seeing the gratification of happiness, there's certain kinds of happiness, happiness of sense pleasure, they're pretty ephemeral, pretty fleeting. So the teaching around that is, yes, acknowledge it, acknowledge that happiness around that sense pleasure, and see how far it extends. This is kind of beginning to understand just how high is that little hill? What level of the happiness are we at? So, you know, meeting this, the pleasure of the senses, we see that the happiness doesn't, it's not terribly long-lasting. Some of the other happinesses that as we move into our practice, the happiness of concentration has a little more duration to it when we can stay in that concentrated state. We also see that it doesn't have any impact on others. It's not taking anything away from others. The happiness of non-reactivity can carry us through a lot of our life when we find that kind of place of balance and the learning how to meet this moment as it is. There can be a kind of a happiness that has a very kind of deep river to it, kind of a deep running river that can feels like we can just tap into that. It's got quite a bit more stability, this happiness of non-reactivity. So noticing when it happens, noticing how it's happened, the causes and conditions, what supports happiness? In my experience, I found a certain couple of very simple things. Slowing down, doing less, getting enough rest, getting enough sleep really can help happiness. Just being, having enough rest to be present. Meditation supports happiness. and mindful awareness. Really, I think mindful awareness is that, is our guide through that homeostatic process that will lead us towards the deepest happiness, the happiness of truly letting go of wanting things to be other than they are. The Buddha called this the highest happiness, this happiness of peace, non-reactivity. So we have a couple of minutes if there's any comments or any thoughts.
Well, thank you for your talk.
You're welcome. Yeah.
I understand totally what you're saying about just allowing yourself to be, and you know, you're not going to find happiness in chasing something. But I know someone who's always chasing, and she's always happy. So how do you explain that? She's happy chasing, and she's completely fine.
Well, you know, my guess is that at some point there will be something that happens for her where her chasing doesn't end up satisfying her. I mean, we can fool ourselves for a long time, especially when we're young. And, you know, the delusion is this incredible cloud that we just don't see through. So, yeah, it's delusion. You know, it's a kind of happiness that... it doesn't have a lot of substance to it. And at some point, she will probably discover that. And at that point, there will be some kind of a shift, perhaps. I mean, some people don't ever find it. I mean, some people just keep trying to find the next thing. You know, just, can I make more money? You know, and then, okay, I can be happy for a while. Oh, and more money. What do I do now? Or, oh, now I know I need to do something completely different. I need to move to Hawaii. That's what I need to do. You know, so you just kind of, again, keep trying to arrange it. And you can, for periods of time, find that happiness. But at some point, that exhaustion will probably catch up with her.
Okay. It's a wait and see.
I would worry, think more about your own situation, you know, is for you, where do you need to be looking? Where do you need to be meeting the world?
Oh, I stopped chasing.
Well, thank you. So we need to stop, and thank you for your attention.